Welcome to The Mountain Life. I'm Mary Beth Maziarz.
And I'm Lynn Ware Peak. Our guest this morning started as a peer sex educator at the age of 14. Fast forward a couple of decades, and Caitlin V is our guest this morning. She's now is a renowned intimacy expert.
Today, Caitlin V has over 900,000 YouTube subscribers, 150 million views, and has logged more than 60,000 hours of clinical coaching with clients in over 150 countries. You may also know her as the featured sexologist on Discovery Plus's Good Sex program. Now she's channeling two decades of science and experience into her new book, Harder, Better, Longer, Stronger: Science, Skills, and Secrets for the Best Sex of Your Life. It's being called The Sex Playbook Men Were Never Given. Caitlin V, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. In the tagline of your book, you mentioned the best sex of your life. What's your working definition of that kind of superlative level sex?
Oh, what a brilliant question. So it's really how each individual decides for themselves, like what represents the best for them. A lot of folks that come into my office are hung up on frequency or quantity. Typically, by the time that we've worked together and we've kind of like dug into what sex really means to them and how they want to experience it, it often really does come down to quality. It often comes down to the way that they want their intimate life to make them feel. And that could be close, connected, loved, desired, safe. And all of those things are going to be, you know, I think we all can identify with all of them, but the specific ratio is going to be very unique person to person and relationship to relationship. And what I want more than anything is for my book to show people that they're not broken, that the steps to get to the kind of intimate life that they want are available and accessible to them, and then show them how to begin to walk that path. Because I believe that all people deserve to have an incredible intimate life, and most of us just lack the know-how to create it for ourselves.
Fantastic. That's a perfect definition. Well, people of one generation may remember Dr. Ruth Westheimer as their first exposure to someone speaking frankly about sexual topics. Another generation may think of Dr. Drew. Now, you might be the one that they turn to. What do you think is possible in today's climate of sexuality advice that wasn't available to people in the past?
I was actually thinking about this morning, right before we jumped on, that I definitely grew up in the Dr. Ruth generation of folks, and that there isn't really one singular source for any kind of education anymore, right? I mean, we don't have 4 or 20 or even 100 television stations. We have millions of social media profiles, and you can get any kind of education or any kind of information that you desire, often filtered through a lens of entertainment nowadays. And the landscape has changed significantly. The amount of adult content, not educational content, just strictly entertainment content that is available to all of us through our cell phones at any given moment. We're two clicks away from watching people do things that when I was a teenager, you couldn't find on the internet, right? And anyone who's older than me didn't have the opportunity to download those files as a teenager, right? So the amount of strictly entertaining adult content that people have access to, and people are subconsciously getting as well. It's not just if you're seeking out those websites, it just kind of exists a lot more in the ether as well. And yet our educational landscape has not changed. If anything, I think it's gotten worse over time because we don't have a figurehead like a Dr. Drew, like a Sue Johansson, like a Dr. Ruth. And so the ratio of information that is educational or that is entertainment only to information that is educational has shifted really significantly over the last 20 years. And I think it's left us feeling like we have a lot of access without a lot of useful and practical information to match it.
Caitlin, you wrote this book primarily for men. But what an interesting audience you would also have in women who, you know, would love to read about how men can find their best sexual selves. Men just don't talk to each other, or do they? I mean, this is how I have learned, I think, through the years, through the decades, from these really thoughtful, open, empathetic talks with my girlfriends. Mm-hmm. What do men talk about?
Well, that landscape has shifted in a lot of ways, right? Now it's more socially acceptable for men to see a therapist. It's more socially acceptable for men to speak openly about work stress or about financial stress. So we've seen a massive shift in the expectations for men in terms of vulnerability. But this is, I think, the final frontier of male vulnerability. I think it's no longer strange for us to imagine a couple men getting together and talking about some kind of difficulty or hardship that they're experiencing over beers, which is beautiful. We've made so much progress in that area. And yet it's hard to fathom two men getting together and talking about the challenges that they're experiencing in their bedrooms behind closed doors. And what I found is that YouTube, which is where I create the majority of my content, has been an amazing vehicle for delivering those messages to men in a space that feels safe and acceptable and private. And once those cracks have sort of let some light in, what I find is that men become a lot more open and a lot more available to share, also in the presence of other men. But I think that's the magic of the internet. They don't have to, you know, necessarily be face to face with a brother after, you know, a game to have these conversations. They can speak with a guy who is 300 or 3,000 miles away and realize that they're not alone. And I think that that creates a lot of permission for men to continue those conversations, even in their personal lives, like with their wives, with their girlfriends, maybe even with a coach or a therapist or another professional.
Yeah. Well, even on this show, as an NPR affiliate, a radio station, we're still being broadcast into people's cars. Mm-hmm. And we picture them sort of driving around or going to the recycle center where they blast KCW. And we, Mary Beth and I, even had this conversation about this particular interview. You know, should we do it? Is it going to be too much? And I'll just leave it at that. Too much what? We don't know. And yet, if you look at any list of the most crucial elements of having a good relationship, you know, right after good communication is usually good sex, mm-hmm. or a harmonious sex life, or, a, you know, however you want to describe it. Why do we still have such a hard time talking about it?
Yeah. Well, I think one thing that I like to think about is that the fact that we struggle to talk about it is actually one of the things that makes it more exciting and thrilling for folks in a way that we can sometimes confuse with quality, that we can sometimes confuse with desirability. So let me be really clear about what I'm saying here, is that the fact that we struggle to talk about something makes that thing feel more exciting. Right. And I think that many folks have this sort of protective stance of, oh, if we start talking about that, if we sort of like turn the lights on that, then we're going to lose something. It's going to lose some of the magic. It's going to lose some of the sizzle. But actually, the opposite is true. The more that we talk about our intimate life, the more opportunity that we have to improve it. But rightfully so, a lot of folks have never had that modeled for them. Our parents did. My parents certainly didn't. I grew up in the Midwest and I had no framework for how to talk about an intimate life. My parents didn't, they didn't have intimacy even in the sense of like hugging, kissing, holding hands, right? They didn't have a lot of like physical contact between them. They slept in separate bedrooms. I had no sense of what it looked like to have an intimate relationship inside of a marriage in the primary example that I was given growing up. And so I think we lack role models that show us how to do this. And we lack, or we think that we lack the capacity to have these conversations. But what I find is that when we start having them in ways that feel safe and approachable and acceptable, and then we stay just at the edge of our comfort zone in those conversations. You know, I think a lot of people are surprised at how measured I am when I coach people, how slow and thoughtful and intentional I try to move these conversations along so that they have direction and they have momentum, but they stay within the bounds of what our nervous system can handle. And what we find is that by progressively moving in the direction of having open conversations that eventually our bodies and our minds learn that they are safe to have, that they're actually beneficial to have, and they become more routine and more easy to engage in over time.
If you're just joining us on the program this morning, we're speaking with Caitlin V about her new book, Harder, Better, Longer, Stronger: Science, Skills, and Secrets for the Best Sex of Your Life. There's a concept that you write about in the book called the man box, a set of cultural expectations that keep men trapped in shame. How does shame affect a man's sexuality? Can you walk us through what that construct looks like in real life?
So Paul Keevil originally created the concept of the man box to demonstrate the ways in which men and masculinity has to be created. That masculinity is something that has to be that is defined in many ways by what it is not. It's not feminine. It's not gay. It's not soft. It's not caretaking. It's not all of these things. And so in order to keep yourself as a man inside of the man box, you have to be constantly performing masculinity and pushing other people out of the man box, right? We hear the term like, you're not a man, or man up, right? So what those terms are enforcing is that there is a right way to do masculinity and to be a man. And in order to do that, you must fit this limited definition of what you are allowed to do, who you're allowed to be, how you are allowed to behave. We, as women, don't have the same level of restriction inside of what it looks like to be a woman, because to be a woman is defined by all of those other things, right? There's a lot of flexibility around what it means to be a woman. Fortunately, this is changing. Paul came up with that concept back in the 80s, but it still applies today, right? Men write me every single day saying that one concept alone helped them to understand themselves differently and help them to adjust the way that they approach intimacy and relationships. Because what happens is that if we are acting inside of our intimate life from the prescribed way of doing things, right? From the way that other people have told us is acceptable and the kind of behavior that we are allowed, we are not actually acting out of our own individual self-expression, right? And this hurts women and men equally. Because you have one example that I could give that, well, I think we'll give this some like real weight, is I had a client come to me once for coaching. He was a private jet pilot, really successful, really handsome guy, like all together on paper, right? And he was in a relationship, and he I'll put it really delicately, just wasn't performing the way that he expected himself to in his intimate life. And what we discovered through our work together is that actually he was a very energetically and emotionally sensitive being. Which actually, if you is a brilliant thing for a pilot to be. Of pilots that are extremely sensitive, extremely intuitive, extremely energetically tapped in, tend to do a phenomenal job at being pilots. But when he was trying to be intimate with his partner, he was doing it in this way that was very direct, very rushed, very direct to genitals, very focused on bodies and outcomes, and it wasn't aligned with who he was as a person. The sex that he was having fit inside of the man box, certainly, but it didn't fit inside of his own life and his own way of doing things, which was a lot slower, which was a lot more intuitive, which was a lot more connected and less about the physical connection and way more about the emotional and relational and energetic connections. And once he got that was actually the way that he was wired and that he should approach intimacy, his entire intimate life changed. He was able to break out of the prescribed way of doing things and actually, to borrow that term, have the best sex of his life.
Wow. We spoke a few months ago with an author, Dr. Nicole Hargons, who wrote a book called Good Sex, and terrific author. And she writes about the sexual menu and how individual it is. And we all tend to think it's supposed to look like it looks in a movie. You're supposed to kiss a certain way. You're supposed to make out a certain way. And how it is incredibly individualistic. And I'm hearing that message from you too. How do you suggest people tap into what their true sexual identity is?
So
maybe identity isn't exactly the right word, but you know what I mean.
That's a brilliant question. I like to take that out of the bedroom to start. Communication is another area that we could look at where we want to take the things that you're already good at outside of the bedroom and then bring that as the template, as the model into your intimate life. So what that looks like in terms of knowing your wants, needs, desires is finding what brings you pleasure in a non-erotic context. So what are the things that you love that have you feel good? So I'm very sensual in nature. So I love to have clothes that are extremely soft and stretchy. And yeah, I see some nods. And have a very lovely textural landscape in my life outside of my bedroom. I've been able to identify that those things really bring me a lot of pleasure. And so I can use that as a template for things that do bring me a great deal of joy and pleasure and satisfaction inside of the bedroom. I'm going to know that physical touch and the texture of things. And, you know, for me, something like having a lot of close contact and intimacy in the form of just like snuggling and cuddling are really important for me. But I know that about myself, even outside of that context. And the more open that we are to experiencing like capital P pleasure, like big umbrella term pleasure outside of the bedroom, the more that we can learn about what it is that we like inside of it. But I think that when we compartmentalize our intimate lives, we can fail to actually make the important connections that would have us see our intimate lives through a different and more creative lens. And one of my goals for all of my work is to expand our definitions and expand our erotic creativity. Because the truth is that, speaking of, you know, role modeling and templating, unless we see something or know of something that we might like, how would we have developed that information? Unless we're, you know, experimenting and we're trying things, and most of us are not. And most of us are not exposed to a lot of like really interesting ideas. To your point, we have an idea of what it's supposed to look like and who it's with and all that. And unless we do the work, and it doesn't have to be stressful or difficult work, it can actually be really fun and creative work. But unless we do the work of expanding our possibilities, then of course we are going to feel a little stuck with what's been handed to us, and it's going to feel less desirable over time and naturally.
Yeah. Caitlin, I love your example of the pilot. That is just, it's so perfect. And I think that listeners can say, oh yeah, that's me. They can really identify that. I'm wondering, I mean, you are an intimacy coach, and so people are coming to you with some kind of perceived issue, right? But I'm sure you also have many, many conversations with men who just have it together, who really have their sexual sort of identity, you know, really healthy, pleasurable, where they want it. And I'm wondering, when you have those conversations, what is the come from that those men have had? Like you described your model from your parents. What is their model that has made it so?
Well, you know, I write about this in the book. There are so many different kinds of intelligence, right? Kinesthetic intelligence, right? Some people just know how to move their body. They make beautiful dancers. They can learn choreography. They seem to know naturally how to place and move themselves. And some of us, myself included, weren't born with a great deal of kinesthetic intelligence, and we had to learn it along the way. I was very clumsy for most of my life until I, you know, put the work in to figure out where my body was in space. I think that some folks are born with a higher level of erotic intelligence than others. I think some folks just come out and they kind of have an innate understanding of how to touch and move and how to experience their own body in a way that feels good for them. And the rest of us get to learn it along the way. But if we are not given permission from ourselves primarily, but also from the culture around us and the household that we grew up in, to learn about those things, then we can feel like something is wrong with us. We might just feel like something is broken, but it's just the same way as like if you really struggle to learn choreography. There's nothing broken or wrong with you. You just have to put in a little extra time and learn those steps and, you know, ideally go and learn from the folks who are the professionals who have already figured out how to teach it in a way that makes it easy to learn.
Yeah. For our listeners, Caitlin, your YouTube, it's just Caitlin V, and it's Caitlin with a C and a capital V, like victorious. And you have, you know, nearly a million followers on your YouTube channel. Do you have any idea? Can you know how many of those are men?
Yeah, actually, YouTube does an amazing job with analytics. I mean, of course, they're taking an educated guess a lot of the time using Google's data. But about 85 to 90% of my audience is men. And to tell you the truth, I never set out specifically to work with men. When I was a professional sexual health educator, I was working with all kinds of different populations of folks. I obviously am not a man. And if you had told me 15 years ago that I would end up being sort of like the internet's lead sexpert for men, I probably would have laughed. But the truth is that when I started creating content, there was one audience for whom it really, really deeply resonated. And I very much believe in answering the call that's in front of you, right? And it just so happened to be that men who were dealing with performance anxiety primarily, and that manifested in a lot of different physical ways, but at the end of the day, what they were experiencing was some fear, some concern, some insecurity around their ability to perform. And they kept showing up, and they continue to show up. And it's been such a privilege to serve them because I have such a unique perspective on men that I think most women don't get to have. And I really wish that in this day and age where I don't know about you all, but I feel the like percolating heat of the gender war all over social media and women hating men and men hating women and people going their own way and not dating anymore. And I just wish that I could give, like, I could bottle up what I see from men every single day and then gift that to women who feel frustrated or who feel, you know, pessimistic about men as a whole, because the truth is that men, the phenomenal, terrific, incredible men are out there every single day doing the work to improve themselves, the way that they relate, the way that they communicate, the way that they touch. And it just gives me such hope.
I love it. We are now in a time where children are taught the proper names for their body parts, and there's a lot more acceptance on the queer spectrum, all kinds of things. There's a lot more happening from a younger age. And I love this idea of how can we launch our young people into their sexuality in a way that you don't have to repair it as much later. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm a conscious mom, and I'd love my sons to have a healthy relationship with sex in their lives and to feel confident about bringing their partners pleasure without being creepy. How can I, as a mom, help them find the information that can allow those things to happen?
Yeah, that's a brilliant question. There are all kinds of incredible age-appropriate sex resources available by phenomenal educators. And I think that, you know, each, just like not all men resonate with me and my message, not all young people are going to resonate with any one educator or any one message. And so I think part of the work for parents is to make multiple resources available. And that includes yourself, right? Having multiple conversations over time, making yourself available to discuss, because this isn't a single faceted subject, right? I mean, I like to compare sex to food a lot because food is an area, I'm not like a natural born cook. And so I've had to learn how to make food and how to relate to food and how to nourish my body. And, you know, I don't know if you remember, like, the back of the days in the Food Network, you'd have like Giada and
with the British woman with the black hair who was so sensual about the food. Nigella Lawson.
Nigella Lawson, yeah. Yes. So all of these folks have something beautiful to contribute to the conversation about food and cooking and nourishing our bodies and our families, right? And so having multiple experts and multiple sources of information on intimacy is just as important, because the range and the variety and the way that each message lands is going to be unique to each person who's delivering it and receiving it. And the other piece of that I would say is that we often talk about sexuality is something that men do to women, or like that men's sexuality is inherently dangerous, right? And this is part of the work that I want to undo, is to help men see that they are sexual beings, and that at its base, that's not good or bad. It just is. And so they need to be responsible with their sexuality. They need to be thoughtful and intentional, but not just because they could hurt someone else, but because they themselves can also experience hurt and harm. Yeah. And so expanding the way that we think about both men and women, removing some of the sort of like cultural levels of stigma and shame that get applied, not by parents specifically, I mean, certainly in some households, but like by the air that we breathe, by the things that we just absorb, by being out in the world, and helping both young men and women to see that they have autonomy, they have sovereignty, they have the capacity to be hurt and to do harm, but they also have the capacity to connect. They also have the capacity to speak and to ask and to learn how to set boundaries and speak them. There's so much opportunity there. And when we take sexuality as a microcosm of all of those other things, we actually allow it to strengthen our ability to communicate and strengthen our ability to connect with other folks and strengthen our ability to care for ourselves and protect ourselves. And if we're able to do it in that area, if we're able to do it when it comes to intimacy, you bet that we'll be able to do it one day at a job with a boss who doesn't respect our boundaries. The skills that you can develop in sex and sexuality are transferable to every other area of your life if you are brave enough to go and develop them.
That is the quote of the interview, my friend. This has been a fascinating discussion. We've been talking with Caitlin V. Her new book is called Harder, Better, Longer, Stronger: Science, Skills, and Secrets for the Best Sex of Your Life. And yes, it's a little bit of a spicy title, and I'm sure that's on purpose because it helps us remember and helps grab our attention. But there is so much quality information, studies, and guidance. And if you happen to have the audio version of this book, there are even meditations, kind of coaching sessions. There is a lot of fantastic education in this book, and I can't recommend it highly enough. Caitlin, thank you so much for being on The Mountain Life.
Thank you so much for having me. This is phenomenal.
Thank you, Caitlin.